listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. Each week, my guests and I will bring you answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. With me is co-host extraordinaire and psychologist, Dr. Melody Fox. Once again, we've spirited Melody away from her private practice in Newport Beach, where she works with adults and their relationships, as well as teens and their families. Melody, how was your weekend?
Lot of self-care and just rested all weekend. It was great.
So not any trick-or-treaters interrupting that?
Nope, none at all.
Okay. Melody, as you know, deciding to send a child to residential treatment is a very difficult decision and a huge commitment, but for many parents who do, they ultimately save their child's life and help the entire family. Tell us a little bit about, have you had any involvement in that?
Yes, I've worked with several inpatient residential treatment settings, whether it be group homes or very large group homes, 114 beds, etc. And overall, I think it is a wonderful place for a child to get 24/7 care. A lot of things come up in the middle of the night. It's nice to have staff there that know what they're doing. A lot of parents don't know how to cope with a lot of the issues that come up with the teenagers that rise with them. So I think residential settings are an extraordinary opportunity for the teens to be in a trusting and safe environment to work through whatever issues are going on with them. Also, with the staff there and their knowledge, being able to work with the parents to help them work with their teens once they come back home. I think it's a great opportunity.
Well, that's great. And also, I mean, to help us discuss this topic, our guests today are Drs. Andy Sapp and Chris McRoberts. Both are licensed clinical psychologists and owners of Cherry Gulch, which is a small private therapeutic boarding school for boys. Both doctors have extensive experience working with children, adolescents, and families in the fields of mental health, psychology, and residential treatment. Gentlemen, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you so much for having us on the show. We're really excited.
All right, that's Andy and Chris. You out there?
Yep. Thank you for having us.
All right. I think to start off with, so that our listeners kind of have an idea, talk a little bit about therapeutic boarding schools, just kind of an overview so that some of our listeners who maybe aren't familiar with this have an idea of what we're talking about.
Sure. Yeah, the reason for a therapeutic boarding school, of course, is when things are getting really difficult at home and it's just not working. The students and families are stuck in this pattern that's very difficult to break out of when they're in that same environment. And so the therapeutic boarding school or other residential environment can be a place where the student can go off and get some help and the parents can continue to get help from the program and from their counselors at home while the student's in the program, and to help build that positive bond and positive memories and kind of set the restart, the reset button, push that button to start over, to give them a good start and allow there to be a little bit of space there so that that conflict isn't ongoing. Because a lot of the times when a student comes to a residential therapeutic program, there's such a great degree of conflict in the family that it just keeps getting worse and worse rather than getting better. So if we can break that pattern, we can help reunite the family, help with the parents with some parenting strategies, and basically give away the program by teaching the parents what we're doing at our school at Cherry Gulch to help their son be successful.
Well, now share with us a little bit just about, I mean, you know, how a therapeutic boarding school or any other high-quality residential environment can help the child as well as strengthen a family unit.
There's different boarding schools, therapeutic schools, of course, for different needs. ours is for the younger students, the 10 to 14-year-old or so boys, and so we work with a lot of ADHD, oppositional defiance, depression, anxiety, some learning differences, Asperger's or social skills difficulties, and so we have lots of targeted ways of doing that, a lot of experiential pieces with equine-assisted psychotherapy and interactive groups that have been shown to be more effective even than one-on-one individual therapy with a teen. So there's a lot of pieces that we're doing on the side of helping a student, but there's also a lot of things that we're doing for the family. And so weekly there'll be phone calls with a licensed clinician and the child and their parents to kind of work through those issues, and then family workshops 4 times a year for 3 days at a time to help, really help kind of establish the change that needs to take place, teach the parents how to do that, get the child so that they're willing to allow their parent to parent them and to empower the parents with more skills so that they can take those skills and have a more successful transition home.
You mentioned a lot of different individual issues, such as ADHD and anxiety and oppositional defiant disorder. Can you talk a little bit of how you come to that? Is that through psychological testing? And if you do that, how does it serve you and value you in making that placement of that child with you?
Yeah, Chris, can you take that one?
You bet. That's probably it's right up my alley. I, in addition to my ownership at Cherry Gulch, I run a consulting group of psychologists. That I have a number of psychologists on my staff with different specialties in various areas of psychology and mental health practice. So I have psychologists that specialize in understanding behavioral disorders and psychologists that specialize in understanding emotional disorders like depression and issues like anxiety or even schizophrenia. Then I've got other psychologists who specialize in learning disabilities or issues that are arising out of problematic kinds of brain functioning due to trauma or a problematic birth or high fevers or anything else that might have affected a child's brain. So we use a wide variety of psychological tests depending on the types of problems a particular student is having. And then based on the results of the tests, we're able to give good, solid, concrete, and reasonable diagnoses that fit this student's behavioral profile and their emotional profile, as well as what their academic skills and abilities are. And then based on that information provided through testing, we can consult with a program like Cherry Gulch or with an educational consultant or some other professional who might be considering placing a student in a therapeutic school so that the test results guide the student in being placed in the right place instead of just being plunked down into a school that might be more a warehouse for them or someplace that doesn't really fit their particular and individualized needs. So testing, to me, is a critical part of any consideration that anyone should have before they place their student in any kind of therapeutic school.
And how important is it during your intake process and your psychological testing to gather information from not only the parents, but perhaps the siblings or grandparents or teachers, perhaps, when you're working?
Yeah, it's critical, and especially for a program like Cherry Gulch. You know, the psychologist gets one type of information, but it's kind of a snapshot, a picture of where is this student today. And before he admits a student, for example, Dr. Sapp will get previous teachers, previous therapists who've worked with the student for a long period of time and who really know them well to ensure that they get a good match of the student and the type of program that they're applying to.
Yeah, let me ask both of you. I know that with some of the families that we work with, if we've returned a runaway or something, we will try to then, you know, explain to the parents that there are avenues that they can search out. You know, we may be referring them to a psychologist or we may be referring them to an ed consultant. But I know that some of the parents worry that if they enroll their child in a residential placement, that their teen will somehow become institutionalized or somehow not be able to function as well in the outside world. What are your thoughts on those parents with those fears?
I mean, certainly that would be a fear, Alan, for like an orphanage and not getting that basic nutrients and things of being in it for a long term in a place that's not nurturing and enriching and helping them grow. But our school is all helping them grow, to nurture them, to help them go out and get experience, to help them learn the skills to be more independent, to learn the skills to be successful at home, school, and in life. And so I just don't see that as being an issue for students that go to a quality program like ours. In fact, this issue came up at a recent family workshop that we did, and one of the dads who happens to be a psychiatrist, he was like, well, what do they mean institutionalized? I guess they could consider it institutionalized if you want your kid to get into Harvard, because this is a really high level of care. This is for parents that want the best for their children, and you could say that same thing about kids going to the highest kind of college preparatory boarding schools in the country, those real great traditional boarding schools. People don't say that those kids are being institutionalized, and certainly if you look at what we do, I don't think that people would say that about other therapeutic schools either, because of the enrichment that's put into the program.
Well, and I thank you for that.
There's a difference in the types of schools that might be considered. For example, at Cherry Gulch, our goal is to teach new skills so that the student can go home and be reunified with their family. There are schools out there, unfortunately, where the focus is on monetary gain and where they don't really have that same goal. They want to enroll a student and lock them in for 3 years of treatment, sort of regardless of how well the student does. And this is why it's critical to have professionals involved who know the programs and can help parents steer toward programs that have the same goals that the parents have, rather than goals to just make money or just to keep the kid in treatment.
Well, and thank you for that. And I'm glad that the listeners out there are hearing it from you, because that's very similar to what it is that I tell them when I hear those stories, be it in a PTA type of environment or working with just one particular family, is just as you've said, if you're working with the right professionals, that is not their focus and that is not their goal. And in most cases, as you're saying, the goal is actually not to make them be able to work well within the program, but it's greater than that. It's to be able to work well within the family that they're going back to. So I'm glad we're all on the same page with that.
I was curious, what are some of the myths or resistance that you've heard from maybe some parents that they've heard about residential treatment?
Well, one of those is that they're all bad kids at places like this, and that's just absolutely not the case. These are wonderful boys with lots of potential and lots of hope, but yeah, they have some challenges, just like we all have some challenges, and our job is to help them overcome those and get them on the right track. But these are wonderful boys. If you were to visit the school, you'd be surprised at how polite they are and respectful and happy and friendly. They're just good kids. They just have some challenges, and that goes along with another issue of, if I send my student to a place like that, won't he pick up on their bad habits and get even worse? And I think there's certainly some truth to that, which is one reason why we stick to kind of this younger population, because we don't want our boys in with older students that are doing drugs and having sex and stealing cars and things like that. So we try to kind of protect them a little bit from that. But for the most part, too, you've got students at different levels within a program that are acting as that kind of positive peer group to help each other through the program. So that's another myth. And by the time a student needs to get to a residential program, there's some really significant things going on. And what's really important at that time is to get them the help that they need. Another one is that if you send your student to an all-boys or all-girls school, they'll become gay, and there's just no evidence for that whatsoever. It just isn't something that should be worried about. And that's, I guess, the last and the biggest one is if I send my child to a residential program, they're never going to forgive me. They're going to hate me forever. And some of the kids say that, but I'll never see you again, or I'll never love you again if you do this. And they're just trying to get their parents not to make that decision. But ultimately, time and time again, I see students that are really happy with the success that they've had at least at our therapeutic school, and they'll thank their parents for having sent them to our school and for giving them this experience and this opportunity. So that one's definitely not true either.
Well, I can add to that from the standpoint of going out and touring programs as I do, and I did again recently within the last couple of months, and it's always just such a wonderful experience to me to go out and to talk to some of the kids, talk to some of the ones that my company has brought there, and in many cases what they will do is they will run up to me and ask me if I can relay a message to the person that brought them there. And say, can you please apologize? And I just had one. They said, can you apologize to in this case, it was Liesl. And they said, because I said some really mean things at that time, but I was just really trying to do it to try to manipulate to the point of not having to go. And now I'd like you to apologize to her for the things that I said to her. And secondly, can you tell her that this is one of the best things that's ever happened to me in my life? So, taking that from someone at that point, when I'm there, they don't have to tell me anything. You know, they don't have to. That's all things that they're volunteering to send back to someone. And I just think that's a beautiful thing. And I also want to add, when Andy just spoke about the fact of the good kid, bad kid thing. I was on an airplane, and I may have told this story before, but I was on an airplane and I was transporting someone, and I was seated next to them, and I was wearing a shirt that said West Shield Adolescent Services, transporting teens to a better future. And this woman looks over at me and she goes, I know who you are. I've heard of you. You're that guy that transports those bad kids to those programs to get fixed. And I said, well, ma'am, actually, I'm not. And she goes, you're not that person? And I said, no, I said, I'm that person. I said, I'm the person that takes good kids to programs where they can deal with the fact that they may have made some bad decisions. And then she, but I think it's a mindset. That's the mindset that you have with your program, that we have with bringing them there, and that most of the people that the parents will meet in this industry.
Yeah, I think all of that's absolutely true. I can't count the number of kids that I have done an evaluation on and then seen several years later, maybe at a school or a program, who thank me and say, I hated you for a long time because you wrote that evaluation that said I needed to go to a therapeutic school, so I thought it was all your fault, but this is the best thing that ever happened to me. And then they're very grateful. In fact, we've got a couple of those kids at Cherry Gulch right now, and one of them has been there. He came and then was discharged, and then he came back again. And when I saw him there last month, he just thanked me profusely for having him there. Said his life is much better and much happier than it's ever been.
I was curious.
That's pretty rewarding.
It is rewarding, and I know you do good work out there. And I was just curious, how do you work with the parents that are trying to deal with the guilt they feel about making the decision to send their child to a therapeutic, residential treatment, which is more than just a couple days. It's for an extended period of time.
And actually, gentlemen, before you answer that, I want to add a listener question to that, because we have a listener question that's very, very similar. And it goes like this. It says, last year our nephew was in a treatment center for attempting suicide. His mother, parentheses, my sister, has had a very difficult time with the situation. Now that Jason is home, she feels she is walking on eggshells, and her husband's social life has dwindled to nothing. I am certain this is because they feel that they are being judged by their friends and other family members. Is there anything you can suggest that I can send to her or a parenting group or any materials that she could read that would help what they're going through right now?
Yeah, for One is just that that's really what I wanted to do this topic about, was to reach out to those families who they've really made the right decision. They went and they got the help that they needed to get for their son to help them have a better life, and just at the time when they need the most support, because yeah, it's a really hard decision. They do often feel judged or shamed, or have even family members or close friends making comments that, you know, I can't believe you did that. And so I think the biggest thing is just to reach out and be a support to that mom and that dad and that family. And the next piece is to realize as a parent, if you made that decision, that was being proactive, that you made the best decision for your child based on the information that you had at the time. And there's people that say, I've never do something like that. But in reality, that was the right thing to do. That some of those parents that would never do that or say they would never do that, that they have kids that do end up actually killing themselves or getting addicted to drugs or getting thrown in juvenile hall or prison, and they should have done that. They should have taken the action rather than just thinking, oh, we're going to white-knuckle it and get through this. So absolutely, I commend the parents for making the hard decision and getting their son the help that they need. And we're not talking about parents, as you know, Alan, who this is the first step. I mean, they've tried therapy and medication and all kinds of things before they get to the point where they feel that a therapeutic boarding school or other residential program is needed.
Well, and I think you bring up a great point, and I know that we at times will run into that situation where there is a child who has run away, and the parents of their boyfriend or girlfriend want to get involved. When I end up talking with them, it always amazes me, because they will then explain to me, these other parents that are harboring this child, and they'll go, well, you know, let's say that it's a girl that ran away. Well, Kathy tells us that the parents do this and this and this and this and so on and so forth. And I ask them, I go, did you call the parents? Did you talk to them about that? Well, no, I wouldn't do that. I mean, sounds like they're pretty horrible people. And I go, well, now let's see. What if I told you that your child has said all of these things about you? And they said, well, that would be a lie. And I go, and could it possibly be that you're being lied to also? And I said, at this point in time, I said, you are helping your son hide a girl from her parents that is scheduled to go to a program. Well, yeah, I know. And that's why we're doing it, because we heard that that's what they want to do. And again, it's trying to get that other family to understand, number one, it's not really their business. Number two, they don't really know what they're talking about. They're operating out of lies. And at times I have told them, I have pulled up on a website and I've said, take a look at this program that the parents have set up. This is the program. Is this what you've been told? Well, no, we were told all these other things. Again, you're being lied to. You know, these are parents who are struggling. They want to do everything they can to help their child, and your involvement in this is not helping.
And that's kind of a way people sabotage it. Do you know of other ways that well-meaning friends or maybe family members might sabotage this whole process for this family?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, go ahead, Chris, if you want to.
Well, go ahead. I have a long story, so go ahead, Andy.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay, Chris. We have time.
All right. Well, you know, I'm actually embroiled in the midst of all this as we speak. I have a son who just last month turned 17, and my wife and I, during this past summer, made the choice to send him to a therapeutic school. And it was a terribly difficult choice. We struggled with the question of, do we send him, for about the last 3 years. And fortunately, I'm a psychologist, and we've been able to implement lots of behavioral techniques and strategies in our home to work with him, and had some accommodations for school and every kind of accommodation made to help him get through. And yet it wasn't enough. And just during the last school year, we watched him start to spiral out of control with, he was living two lives, really. He had his good friends, who were a bunch of really good kids and high achievers, and then he had his secret friends, that he hid from us, and, you know, he would tell us he was going somewhere with the good friends, but really he was going with the secret friends, and with them he wasn't doing anything egregious even, but, you know, he was doing some shoplifting and just not being where he was supposed to be, and we don't know all that he was doing, but we got to the point where we decided we needed to send him away to a program because he was beyond where we could handle anymore, and we needed to learn some new skills for working with him. Our son older than him is a wonderful kind of a boy, and, you know, is actually, he's a missionary right now, and he's, you know, he's what every parent would want from their kid, got straight A's all the time and scholarships and never really a problem. And our second son was just not as bright and struggled more and had some learning challenges, and it made things really difficult for him. Oh. And as things got more and more difficult for him, he got depressed, he got anxious, and as he got those things, he changed friends to kids who didn't really expect anything from him, and he started making really bad choices. So we found ourselves in exactly this position. Here I am, a professional and a psychologist and somebody who evaluates kids to decide whether they need a therapeutic program or not. And because I was too close to it, I referred him to another psychologist to have some testing done to make sure we had all of the right data and we weren't missing anything. Had all the good testing done. And then I, even though I know many, many programs, and I thought I knew where he should go, I hired an educational consultant to help us make sure that we sent him to the right school that really matched him. And it was interesting that the educational consultant chose exactly the same one that I would have chosen. And my son is now at New Summit Academy in Costa Rica. And the school is a perfect match for him, and he's doing wonderfully. But when we decided to send him there, and the night before we did send him, an anonymous letter appeared on our porch that is pretty hurtful and, you know, directed at really more at my wife than at me, but at, you know, look at what horrible parents you are. Look how bad you are that you would do this to your kid. Not only do we disapprove, but God disapproves of you. So that was pretty terrible.
That's very judgmental, too. You know, is there anything else, Chris, that you'd like to add about your experience of having your son in a therapeutic residential setting to kind of put those people that are naysayers and really, frankly, should mind their own business to rest?
Well, maybe let me read you a couple of the short paragraphs from this letter, because I think they outline the misconceptions that people have about why you would send your kid away.
Sure.
And even just the first paragraph of this person, this letter is unsigned, and I'm assuming that it's from one of my son's friend's parents. Who knows? I don't know. Or maybe even one of my son's friend's grandparents who doesn't really know him. Because my son was great outside the home. Everybody loves him. He's a great kid, and everybody loves him. But he's a whole different person at home when he is home. But anyway, this whole letter starts, "You don't know me, nor do I know you, but I feel as though I need to write this, and I don't know why. I'm just an onlooker to your situation with your son, and I know I don't have all the facts. But in any case, I feel as though I need to write you. I hope you don't take offense." And then it goes on, "You're making a huge mistake sending your son away, so I need to write this." And then this person goes on. This is the part that hurt my wife the most, I think. It says, "We are given only a few years with these children to help mold them into the individuals our Heavenly Father would like them to be. He needs you now more than you realize. Don't give your last 2 years to mold him into the person he will be. Don't give that away. Heavenly Father gave him to you. He trusted you to raise him. If you feel you've lost control, so be it. You've done your best. you know, this person clearly is, they have good intentions, but mm-hmm. they have no idea about what he was doing or who he was or the things that we had tried to do with him. This person goes on to say repeatedly over and over, you need to just trust him. And if you would just trust him, he would not violate your trust. And yet it was when we did trust him that's exactly when he always violated our trust.
Right, exactly. I'm so sorry that happened to you. It probably hit so close to home because you work with families going through exactly what you're going through all the time. And I just
can't. Right,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
These kids go to the program. These kids go to the programs, and, you know, just so parents out there know, the usual process is that they struggle for the first month or two. They may have an initial couple of good weeks, but then they struggle. They don't want to be there. They don't think they deserve it. And after several months, they start to take some accountability and realize, oh, I was creating a lot of problems at home and wreaking havoc on my family. And that's the point where you know they're starting to get it in the program.
Yeah.
And just last week, we went and visited London for the first time since he's been in Costa Rica. And he's, you know, he was able to say to us, well, I don't want to be here, and I don't like it here, and I hate being here, but I realized that I was doing this and I should stop that. And we spent a week with him just touring around the country with our other kids and the family. And I could still see the same patterns in him that have been there for a long time. But I also noticed that he now has the ability to stop himself so much better than he used to. When he starts to annoy people and get on them, he was able to back off. And he just hasn't been able to do that before.
So he's finding
his voice. And
when
they start annoying.
I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
No, it sounds like he's starting to find his voice and be able to figure out who he is.
Yeah, and that, by the way, is also kind of scary as a parent, especially for my wife. Because here he is, he's saying what he really thinks now. And we've always said, well, we want to hear what you really think. But when it comes right down to it, do you want to hear what your kid really thinks?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you do and maybe you don't. Some
That's
of the
right.
things we certainly do, and some of the things we don't.
Yeah, and I think we want to talk more about that, but I think we need to take a quick break right now, if you don't mind holding on a moment.
That's right. We're going to take a break. We are talking with Drs. Andy Sapp and Chris McRoberts, and the topic is Parenting, Tough Choices, Change, Challenge, Hope, and Healing. We'll be right back.
Founded over 25 years ago, to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back with Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Dr. Melody Fox. And our guests today are Andy Sapp and Dr. Chris McRoberts, and founders of the Cherry Gulch Therapeutic Boarding School. And thanks again for joining us today. And while we were at break for that moment, I checked the website, and we had another question that came in through our email. I'd like to ask, and either of you can answer this, but I think it's very pertinent. It says, my daughter was telling me about one of her classmates who was taken out of school last year and put into a treatment for drug use. She's now back at the school this year. But my daughter describes her as all doped up on prescription drugs like a zombie, not herself and very distant. My daughter says this is typical of most of the kids and her friends that get sent away. Do you find that to be true?
I definitely don't find that to be true, at least not from our school and from the other high quality programs like ours. But yeah, I mean, not all therapeutic programs are a place that I would want my son to go or daughter to go or Chris would want to send his kids to either. And so you have to be careful, and that's why I think that he was talking about the psychological testing and hiring an ed consultant. But that's something to find out about. At our school, our psychiatrist, Dr. Cy Steinberg, is really conservative when it comes to the medications and wants to put them on the lowest therapeutic dose possible. And we're also teaching them all these coping skills and ways of relating and ways of dealing, like a toolbox to deal with all the different things that come up in their life so that they won't have to be so heavily medicated like that. And it also sounds like this particular girl maybe doing some manipulating of her own, because that just isn't my experience.
I tend to agree with that. And what about the other person there? What do you think?
Yeah. Chris, what's your thoughts on that? And actually, I have a comment as well, because I was smiling while she was reading that.
You know, it's my experience. I see kids for testing in all sorts of settings, from the least restrictive home placement to the most restrictive hospital setting. And I do see those kids who are, you can tell, you meet them and you know this kid is drugged out of their mind. And of course their behavior is under control because they're so sedated that they couldn't do anything but be under control. And frankly, I mean, I hate to say this, but it's my experience that if you rely entirely on your insurance company to recommend the place and the mode of treatment for your child, they're more likely to go to a short-term hospital setting where the focus is on, we got to get behavior under control quickly to cut costs. And so my experience is that then those kids are more likely to be put on a lot of medications and to have the focus be on medications rather than effective family and therapeutic treatment. Whereas the high-quality kinds of programs like Cherry Gulch and New Summit Academy that we're talking about here today, the focus is on how do we get this kid stable, but also how do we help them improve so that they've got the coping skills they need and the various emotional management strategies that they need so that they don't have to be on a lot of medications.
Right. And along those lines, how does Cherry Gulch and perhaps other treatment centers that you know of keep parents involved in the treatment and also the aftercare to make sure they aren't seeing psychiatrists that are just drugging them up for that short-term behavioral relief?
Yeah, that's a great question. And really, we're trying to begin with the end in mind. That's one of the things that our students are learning about the 7 habits of highly effective teens. And so we're using those same principles in that a student that's coming to Cherry Gulch is a student that's going back home. You know, 90% or so of our students go back home. The other 10% or so go on to a traditional boarding school for whatever reason. But so we need to be successful, we have to help the parents be successful. We have to get that child so that they are now willing to let their parents parent them. And so we're doing that all the way along through the program. And essentially we're trying to give away the program. So we're teaching the parents what's working for their son and then encouraging them and coaching them and teaching them on how to implement that same program back at home, and then helping to set up that transition plan with them as well. Now, sometimes they, you know, we'll certainly stay in touch. We have alumni events, and I actually had a student that left Cherry Gulch and got his first job at a restaurant and then paid for his own ticket to come back to Cherry Gulch to visit us for our alumni event. So it becomes a family. It becomes something that people want to stay a part of, and we want to stay connected. And so they can certainly call back and get support that way as well. And then others, if they need more than that, and we'd certainly encourage them to have a therapist at home to go to individual therapy with, and maybe family therapy. And there's also some transition programs that can help bridge that gap as well for students that need even more. we really try to have lots of visitation and relatively quickly get the students so they can start returning home for home visits. And our population is a little different, so others might have a different population. They do that differently, that they can have phone calls and write letters and lots of ways of staying connected. And by keeping the parents involved in the program and connected, the research shows the generalizability of what their students are learning in the program will be greater back at home, because now we've got the parents' involvement. The more the parents are involved and on the same page with us and on the same page with each other, and so we're being consistent and having that structure and accountability, but also that love and support, the better off it's going to end up.
Yeah, and I think that's huge. I think when you talk about keeping the parents involved and the aftercare, and I know that years ago when aftercare wasn't that much of a focus, and I can recall speaking to a parent where we had to return the child after the child had come home. The child would then run away, and the parent came to me and said, you know, I don't understand, you know, why are these programs failing? You know, this is the third program that my daughter's gone to, and I just don't understand. Alan, what do you think is going on here? And I said, well, the father's name was Peter. I said, what's the common denominator here? And he thought, and all of a sudden a change to his face came up. He said, it's me, isn't it? I said, well, think about it. You know, I go, you know, you've got professionals that have sent you to some great programs, and the only common denominator here is that the child is coming back and going back into your home, and that's when they start to backslide. So you need to make the changes in your home before the child is really going to take to it and not continue to backslide. Would you tend to agree with that?
Definitely.
Okay, Chris. Okay, we'll put this one on Chris.
Yeah, you know, I would say that's absolutely true. And in the example with my son, that's my son's biggest fear. He's making all these changes at the program, and he's terrified that we won't change at home. You know, he's worried that dad will keep working too hard and not paying enough attention to him, and mom will keep nagging him about what he should and shouldn't be doing all the time. And, you know, it's essential for the two of us, while he is there, to make the changes in the style of parenting we utilize with him that we need to make. And frankly, our parenting with him has to be different than the parenting we do with our other three kids. They're a lot easier and a lot more malleable, and he's not.
Mm-hmm.
And we just have to recognize that about him and then utilize the therapeutic supports we've got with his therapist at the program and other therapists that we work with that can help us make changes we really need to make. So we can learn to let things slide that don't really matter and focus on the things that really do matter.
And I'm just curious. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. But I was just curious, how easy is it for you as a professional in this business to take the suggestions from other professionals?
You know, actually, once we decided to do it, it's easy to do. It was getting to the point where I was willing to say, okay, as a parent, I've not been the best parent for this kid, and I'm willing to acknowledge that. And to have all my friends and neighbors and everyone in this kind of therapeutic school industry, I mean, just letting this out today on the radio show is a big deal, because most of the people kind of in our therapeutic school industry don't know that I have a son in a therapeutic school. So it's, you know, it's potentially very stigmatizing, but I also think that that as professional people, whether we're doctors or lawyers or physicians, we're really competent people who are expected to have it on the ball in all areas of our life. And we need to learn to let go of that and just say, well, I may be a great evaluator for other people's kids, but was I the best parent for this kid of mine? Well, not today I wasn't.
Well, Chris...
Chris,
I would say, let me interject. First of all, thank you for being so candid and for sharing this. but I really want to put right back on you something that you said, and that is that we have to parent different children different ways. And I think that that doesn't mean that we are necessarily the wrong parent for that child. I think that all of us have to recognize, as you said, we're, you know, our kids are different, they're wired differently, we have to be able to parent differently. And that doesn't mean that, you know, that necessarily that, that we have done something wrong, but I think just the willingness to talk about it, the willingness to say that we could have done some things different. I don't know that it was necessarily right or wrong, and I think that based on the way that they were wired, maybe this is all exactly what was supposed to happen. So again, as much as I appreciate you sharing, you might be a little too hard on yourself.
Yeah, I think you're right about that.
Yeah, I agree with that as well, Alan. And just since Chris is being so candid, I want to make sure that I'm not being misleading. One way you can look at it that I have 30 kids at a time, and another way, all I've got right now is my little puppy, a boxer, my wife and I do. And I don't know that I'm doing that great a job because she's pretty spoiled, and I don't set good boundaries with her. But, you know, we're trying to have kids of our own. I apparently have slow swimmers, so I'm going to keep trying. But I do share that fear that of being a professional and supposedly an expert in this and having a difficult child that doesn't allow me to parent, and so I end up in a similar situation that Chris is in. And that's, we have a lot of families like that right now at Cherry Gulch. I have students from two different psychiatrists, their own kids, another clinical psychologist, social worker, special education teachers, and yeah, there's the physicians and the attorneys and the executives, but these are very successful, highly intelligent, very caring, loving families that want the best for their kids and have done everything that they can for them. And yes, there is a family component, and that parenting piece is really important. But also, they should take pride in the fact that they've done the right thing by getting their son the proper help now rather than waiting until it's too late. And also, the research shows, I mean, there's just some infants that are difficult. They have a difficult temperament. They're much more difficult to raise. There's, parents have been blamed for history. We've got, like, the schizophrenia. They're used to blame it on the moms, the schizophrenogenic mom, and say that she was giving a bunch of double-blind messages and her causing this kid to be schizophrenic. It's just absolutely not true. You've got, like, the ADHD kids now, more and more, that's showing there's a strong genetic component. The Asperger's kids, there's a strong genetic component. There's a lot of just pieces here where it's a difficult child, wonderful, lots of positives, but they have something different about them. They have a special need that the other students may not have. We've got lots of families that we've worked with where they have kids similar to Chris, so they have another son in an Ivy League school or doing really well, you know, getting all these awards, and then there's this one that has all these learning differences or depression or, you know, this or that that's creating a very difficult for him to be successful the way that the environment and the parenting for this particular kid is different and needs a different approach. And so that's what we're offering, is the ability to kind of reset, to look at that, help the student get to be, you know, reach their goals and to be the best they can be, and also helping to work with the parents on finding ways of parenting their child and raising their child to hopefully have more success with them in their school when they get back home.
Well, I know we need to wrap up in just a moment, but I wanted to just say, I thank you both very much, but I think you normalize this, that this happens in all families, regardless of how good a parent you are or how good you think you are. And, you know, kids don't come with a manual when they pop out on how to work with that particular child. And I appreciate the work you're doing, not only within your own families, but those with others.
Right. And guys, yeah, we are just about out of time. Now, I know there might be other questions out there. If I can squeeze in, we have a comment that came in. It says, as a psychologist, I have dealt with teens who are experiencing very difficult time establishing a normal life after returning from drug and alcohol treatment. They express that although most of their friends treat them normally in school, some of the parents of their friends do not want them back in their homes. The, quote, druggy label is now like a scarlet letter in a time when they desperately need healthy social interaction to remain on the right path. The question is, how do you deal with this issue with the boys returning home from your program? What I'm going to do is I'm going to say, if you can give us that answer, if you can email it to us, I'm going to have people go to our website at www.answers4thefamily.com, and you can pick up the answer there. Also, if anybody has additional questions for you, how can they get a hold of you, either Andy or Chris?
Well, you can find out more about our school, and both of us are listed at cherrygulch.org, cherry like the fruit, gulch like a small valley, .org. And the school contact number is 208-365-3437. And if you call either for Chris or for me, we can get you connected that way.
Guys, thank you so much. We are out of time, but for everybody out there, I will remind all of you, seek to catch someone doing something good every day. I know that these guys do. Take care. Oops.
You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.